For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
I'm more here. This off will ways me putting before us so more making on statement of their own evening. They made along the way a kind of a struggling thoughts all needed. I know where I'm starting, where I'm going. Don't know kind of roots I'll have to give them. So I implore your patience. Going in sort of a relative stuff. And later this morning, we will have service and this will be followed by audio. And I want to start this morning by making some comments about audio as a setup for some fetishes. So, is there 20 Zendo who's completely unfamiliar with audio? And I don't mind, extremely simply is a ceremonial ritual motor room where we set out bullets and we observe and we do this reversed. Audio key is often core for those who are not very familiar with, those who are familiar with it. People can find it a little stressful. This is a great parenthetical. I just want to encourage you to relax your meal. Don't worry about making the space, because most of us make money. One of the ways in which, so I sometimes ask myself, what's going on in this ritual? What's behind the show? So easy to just sort of roll with it without too much derivation. I often find that when I do stop and, just do this thing, thinking, and think about some of our liturgy and our rituals, I find teachings embedded there that I haven't seen when I was approaching it, but I impacted it. One of the things people often say about Origoki is that it is a mindfulness practice. It certainly is, but it's mindfulness in your mindfulness and mindfulness. And the way that we, in something like choreography, the first thing that claims our attention is trying to do things according to form. So we're not just doing things willy-nilly. We're making mistakes, that we're thinking about what we're doing and trying to do it. An incarnate of movement, certain people, and just anything without that kind of thing. You should eat our food according to form, all these things. So this is very important, this kind of mindfulness. But, when we think about the chanting that accompanies, there's all kinds of things to be said about that. But what I'm about to mention today, we have this very important line, that we see the emptiness giver, this is the death. And I think, for me anyway, this is the heart of this particular ritual. And heart, emptiness is the word, and see the death. What does that mean? Well, part of what it means is it's a straight declaration of, depending on our lives, if we're always in this together. Another aspect of mindfulness in audio is that when we receive our sit, this comes into play a little less often in a place like this. I experience much more often. I don't know if I've ever experienced it at Castle Harm, for example, but there also has to be sort of mindfulness alone, right? You have to, and will sometimes be explicitly stated, we are short on seconds, be aware of that so that, have people in mind for the down the line, have the teaching in that, there were times that, you know, it's hard getting out of there. Some good stuff will get short and wouldn't have something that they wanted to have and were not funded. And, you know, they're clear. Yeah, please try to make leave enough so that the patient staff can be set. So there's that kind of thing. There's something, it's not, I don't really call it mindfulness. It's it is paying attention. And that has to do with meaning of overview self. So the key, that's for the basic, it just means all this stuff is goals. That's basically goals. But the OVO is more interesting. I had always thought that perhaps the O was the same kind of honorific O that we add to cases, basically from O case. And Rio, like Rio, is a restaurant. So I thought the Rio, something to do with food. Not the case at all. It's, I think, after 50 years, looked it up. And one of the characters in O, and the one in the O, and the one in the Rio, is one means basically enough sufficient amount, yet not sufficient, and then the other one means one. Now, such things as this. And so the idea, as somebody to me once, it informs Oryoki is this idea of just enough. And when you do the ceremony, what about this? That when we do the ceremony, we are invited by the ceremony. A lot of this may be just projecting into the ceremony as a way of connecting back my own. It let me see some different ways, but we are also informed by the ceremony by the fact that we are served seconds. It becomes very clear that the invitation has something in picky. Some people, and this sort of suggests that you recognize that our needs and our desires are, of course, in some ways, but also that your manifestation of anything is my own. So that what I receive in my bowl, other than this hope that David's also going to get something to eat. I have to be aware of it that way, but to look what I think and look over at Jake and often stupid. I mean, there's no, there ain't commensurate. It's me, what we need, we want what we want. But we do need to be discerning about that. And this is what I want to talk about. I'm here today. It's a book right here. This idea, this question, what's enough? What's enough? You have desires, and within the range of desires, that's what you can talk about things you need, talk about things you want. They're not the same, but they're the same territory. What is enough? What do you need? Honestly, speaking for myself, in my daily life, I don't pay as much attention to this as I should probably do. And since I'm taking on things that I don't take on, I'm consuming things that don't need to consume, et cetera. There's a dog down that's come to my attention relatively recently that this piece of this, and it's a wonderful thing. It's called the Dai Hatsun Daku. The eight teachings or awarenesses or realizations of great beings. And there are obviously eight of them. I want to talk about two specifically. And I will read you the list as on yes. I'm going to read it back so that I land on the ones that I want to land. And that's fine. So, yes, here you go. Back and forth. Not engaging in useful argument, practicing listening, concentrating on settling in dhyana and jhana, not losing sight of the true Dharma, appreciating serenity and quietude, and the reason that I'm thinking about. Knowing one has enough, meaning the person having few desires. This is a festival that came to my attention through my friend and teacher, Zeng Yu, and he had met Honolulu very recently. So you have to have Dice. Dice online, who's translated this commentary by Ichi and Orochi of all these sasas and on this sasa. And anyway, it came to my attention through Zeng Yu, and it was kind of new to me. I don't recall having read these things, this fascicle, but it was the intended as by Dogen. It's the last thing that he wrote, and he intended it to be part of the idea of the most of the time as the final collection, final East in the 12 classical version of Shogo Genzo, and he derived it from pretty directly from Shakyamuni himself. There was a translation of an extraction taking the Mahaparinibbana Bon Sutra, other through Chinese in Japan is the Yoi Dosha, but it is taken, as I said, from the Mahaparinibbana Sutra, and it's also appears in some of the one of the Kayas, one of the Vipali texts, but it is often called the last teaching or the last words of Buddha. It's also the last second out of the GCC, last teaching Buddha presented as well. And so Dogen wrote this in, I believe in 1863, just very shortly before his death, and made clear that he wanted to be the final teaching, and then was appointed with Sangha by Echo, his successor a few years later, Anyway, I really do recommend this festival. Douglas really cool, really wonderful. And so many of the things I realized that I myself, upon many people here, so I really does these things that, Uji or mountains and waters or any things that are like they're so poetic and they kind of really like, sort of hard singing and, the intellectual dexterity to them, keep his rudeness tense spinning. I mean, you can be quite positive. This one, and a few others, not so many other shows you come to mind, it's just very simple and very young words. And as a matter of fact, Uchiyama Roshi, in his commentary, suggests that because of its nature, he says, people always start with Genjo Koan, sort of in the collection. And, that's a very challenging text. He Uchiyama Roshi proposes that the people start with this one and then go walk and then go through the Shobo Genzo backwards and kind of end with Genzo Koan. Anyway, he makes a point that it's very accessible. So, Hachi Daimin Daku. Hachi is a daimin, is a great person. It's literally big person. But what does Dogen mean by that? What does Shakyamuni mean by that? Well, it's kind of given in the hard wording style bath is the first line, one of the first lines is, all Buddhas are great beings, great people, literally. I think it's making a point. So clearly, beings to us. But as I read through commentary by Uchiyama Roshi, and this also means bodhisattvas. It also, because it means bodhisattvas, it also means us. And we're not included. We are included in this institution of us, these notations. It turns out that in colloquial Japanese, the same characters, daimi, are given completely idiosyncratically the readings otona. And otona is basically what it means is an adult. So there's an implication here that there's suggestion of practice as a process of growing up. And something that Jana emphasizes in from his teacher, Kodozawa, that without practice, most of his lives of the what Uchiyama calls the giri opona, which is kind of a pseudo adult, kind of an adult. The way he presents that is that we have not adequately reckoned with our suffering and desires, and that through practice that we can. And he kind of comes around to a position that, you know, when we talk about bliss like these, there's always a tendency to, even sequentially, developmentally or whatever, we can absolutely do that. But there also, there's this quality of them as they spin fascicle. They all include each other. So they're not separate. They're all different. But in one way of looking at it, if he presents, you know, you go backward and where you wind up is with knowing you have enough and having your desire, with the notion that you come to, you know, we swap practice off of this idea, and then encouraged by the text, of course, that the chatter, we can chatter dukkha and it will go away. And that's not quite right. Yeah, that we come to new practice to realize that one very different definition of dukkha is the Huygen mentions is the, you know, not getting what we want and getting what we don't want. That situation, we find out, really doesn't change in some sense. You know, they're always going to be nasties. They're always going to be, you know, achy body parts, you know, any number of things, bad relationships, painful things. So what changes is our relation to this. And Uchiyama Roshi says it's a process of learning to be satisfied with dissatisfaction. Yeah, that's a challenging statement. Learning to be satisfied with dissatisfaction, that we can we can save ourselves a lot of suffering by just acknowledging. And we practice, we can do that and live as two of those, as bodhisattvas in the world. I'll read these two for you. They're each about a longish paragraph on what I will just give them to read. So, well, since I did it in reverse order, I need the second one first. The text appears in different places throughout the book. Okay. So this is an introduction. Then, obviously, the first line I already mentioned, the first line in the past, all the various movies are extraordinary. The second volume, putting that, which is the second realization of a great person, mature person, of a mature practice, is knowing when one has enough, limiting how much to accept of the dharmas, what already has received, is knowing one has enough. The Buddha said, once, if you wish to get rid of various pain and suffering, then you need to see clearly and have enough. This dharma of knowing one has enough is precisely where you will find the greatest wealth, happiness, peace of mind. Despite having to sleep on the ground, a person who knows to be satisfied will find comfortable and be at ease. And to the contrary, a person who does not know what is suffering sufficient will never be at ease and always unsatisfied, even if they live in the greatest condition. Despite having great wealth, a person not willing to be satisfied is, in fact, poverty. On the other hand, though a person may be materially poor, if they know what it means to have enough, then that person is truly rich. One who does not know having enough will always be overwhelmed by the consciousness, only to be pitied by those who understand the need of having enough. This is what is referred to as one has enough, knowing one has enough. First one, having three desires. And even though there's a sequence of eight things in this basketball, I agree with Chiam Woshi needs to really kind of go together. Having two desires. It's so quality of the big things. Having three desires. That is, not widely chasing after the objects of desires. And online, as the men practiced our senses, we know why we want to limit it in that way, but I have not been. That is not only chasing after the elements of one's desires that have not yet been fulfilled is what is called having three desires. But that expanded months. Here's something you need to be aware of. A person with many longings and cravings suffers proportionally greater, precisely because he or she seeks greater personal gain or other benefit. When one pursues fewer desires, there will be less suffering and fewer troubles. Personally, having few desires means fairly studying practice. Moreover, not following those cravings engenders unavoidable merit. The person with few cravings will never try to flatter or ingratiate themselves with others, nor will one of few desires be dragged around by the cravings of the consensus. One whose heart acts with few desires is always at peace and has few anxiety and misgivings. And regarding various matters, such a person feels no need for more. One always has more than enough. In a word, one of few desires is virtually in need of honor. This is what is called having Udvara. So this last line about Udvara, this is why the channel presents it. The list backwards, or it doesn't present the commentary that it suggests, this kind of reverse order, because it's the, yeah, it's the other artist mentioned when he is shot on farm. It brings us to that point of common sense. It's about me, it's about want, it's about the oxidation, the nourishment, and the serene was broken. I mentioned in audio, there's this mention of the mind, what comes next. This is the outward, other-oriented part of Bodhisattva, awareness of other beings, right? And I think the question I might have is, like, how do we do this? How do we, in living our lives, fully take account of the downwind effects, so to speak? And sometimes these downwind effects, if I can go, last week we had Ishil here, and Ishil's in, he was talking about kind of the relinquishment of one's win to do of a She also mentioned the farms of Canada, which we have all ourselves been experiencing at PVC. Really had a comment to the effect that mentioned a friend of hers who had mentioned her that how much they would see it in for people who are experiencing it even worse. Yeah, there are places in the world where they don't. Places where it's just as they all times. You know, and something about Lindy sort of saying that, I said, yeah, because you need that a lot too. I was thinking about why it's time for me to get. And putting in the mind is statement by Bill Fidden, he's talking about resources and some others, talking about throwing things away, and he's pointing out there is no way. And, we are encompassed in this one great net of causes and conditions, and we would like to, like, put things outside of that, or get rid of this and that, but they're not. It's all always right here. All of it, whether we choose to acknowledge it, or recognize it, or not. Likewise, the next night, Joel, and I'm afraid I don't recall his last name, but Joe gave a very interesting talk, and he also mentioned sort of what you might call downing the effects. He talked about his kind of distress and the realization that some of the data crunching we've been doing at SIPMNORC was then being used in ways that I think Joe didn't see always from his ethical condemns these subjects. So, you know, he hadn't seen it. He hadn't looked for it. And so trying to put these things together, you know, when we do the ritual or there's this awareness the way my needs, my wants, and their satisfaction. You know, whether it's usually a one stare on them. You know, what are these things? What are the down effects? How much of what I eat now is something somebody else who might need it, not going to get it? All those kind of things. Others, we think of ourselves as part of the Well, like all the practices of Zendo, it's got its own integrity. It's a thing in itself that we all love. But it's also a kind of training use in a way for what we do when we're not in Zendo, you know? And, you know, this thing of need and desires is so tricky because, you know, I'm starting to feel mighty hungry now and looking forward to lunch. And in a way, that's sort of just mine. I mean, so it's, you know, things sort of food, sex, sleep, all these kinds of things that tend to inherit individuals, seemingly, although they're cultural and social conditioned or whatever, but often needs and especially needs, they also, well, needs and desires are culturally conditioned and socially conditioned. And the mere fact that I would like to get away from them, this is going to cut it. You know, people need to dress in a certain way. Other jobs need to buy gasoline to get to where they need to get, even though they might rather not. So it's all pretty messy. But I think that we're invited to all these deep incidents. What are the consequences? What are the downward effects of my own actions? And, you know, and then we live accordingly to the extent we can. It's understanding that it's not always possible. And we don't worry ourselves too much about, well, this is going to be a contradiction. I'm saying we need to be paying attention to the downstream effects of our actions, you know, but there's another way in which we don't need to care about that. That's the way that we, you know, we live according to vow, according to precepts, to do the best of our ability without, you know, putting into instrumental utilitarian nexus where we say, well, I'm not going to do that. Nobody else's does it. You know, it's not going to make any difference. Suzuki Roshi says somewhere in Senpai Nibiru's mind, something effective, whether the sun rises in the east or the west, the bodhisattva always moves in the same direction. That's the direction of vow, intention. So, you know, the metric, well, it's just going to change the world. That's not relevant. You know, we do it because that's our practice. And, you know, this half year, you know, think about it, 40% of the Buddhist technique is just thrown away. You know, that's just various levels and degrees of carelessness and inattention, right? You can change these things and change these things not because we want ourselves to be, want to think well of ourselves, but because it's all right here and we are right here. And that means that all our actions affect everything, whether we've been sort of empowered and made to go away, whether we see it or not. And we should honor that. I started this morning, I could work in differently. One of the first sermons in the Buddha gave is fire sermon, you know, or months. the fire, the world is burning with the fire of lust. The world is burning, you know, goes out of this. And strangely enough, you know, we've been visited by the fires of the world in the last week. It's very clear that, you know, those are largely consequences of the climate disaster that we're experiencing and so forth. And, you know, it's like what we do, however tiny a way, affects everything. And, you know, we are not outside those fires, you know. Those fires, you know, that's our own collective inappropriate expression of desire we want. You know, and it's sad that, you know, this is one of the things that Huygen often brought before us, you know, this, you know, you need to stay aware of this time happening in the world. You know, and I think I look at my own life and, you know, I'll finish up here, my own life and the way my friends live. And I know that, you know, there's just so much, you know, the atrocities in Gaza, you know, the ridiculousness of the current wars, you know, and in fact, there's something called the fire dashboard or something that I just said the other day. It's not only Canada burning, there are big fires going on. And so, yeah, we'll see what happens. It's done now. But whether there's a paradise ahead or an Armageddon, we are not released from our bodhisattva commitments, and therefore, I can't provide any answers about how to, even for myself, how do we model that? How do we work with some of these times? And once in such a way to both release that and to appreciate, you know, this part of like happiness, appreciating, you know, so I don't have any answers to what that looks like, but I think it's essential that practitioners for us to be alive to that. And I will let it stop there. And if anybody has any comments or questions, I have open.
It's a question. I mean, yes, ma'am. What's the name of the book?
Oh, excuse me. Yes. The name of it is published under the title The Roots of Goodness. And I don't know if this is the original name of General Tommy Harry Mann. I don't know if he gave his title or what it's from. A title, in other words. And I should say, I mentioned this. So, The Roots of Goodness, this actually comes up just twice in the, here goes the teaching, the lunch, right? Thank you, kitchen. You know, the roots of goodness comes up twice, and it's in the very last bit of the classical. And he says, well, how can we practice these things? And he says it's because of, you know, our previous establishment of the roots, which he, you know, in other words, it's a karmic thing. It's after you can address ourselves to these practices now is a consequence of practice we have done in the past. And likewise, he extends it out into the future. And he says, without these practices, one will not be able to carry out goodness. In other words, it's all about what we do. There's no implication of goodness or badness in hearing individually. It's about how we show up, how we exercise and move. So, yes, the roots of goodness, Zenmaster Dogen teaches of the eight qualities of the person, Osho Usam Roshi, as I did in the introduction, but it says, well, you don't need to face the law. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
Thank you, Josh. Thank you so much for that talk. There are lots of things I'd like to ask about, but the one I'm going to ask about is desire and meaning. You know, I have such a different way of thinking about me from the way I used to. I used to say, oh, no, all that I need, all that a person needs is just the basic physical things, and anything beyond that is a desire. But I don't think that's wrong. I no longer think that's right. Because, for example, I both desire and need interesting Dharma conversations and interesting texts, and that can sound like a frivolous desire.
Yeah.
But if I don't feed that desire / need, there are negative effects, and there are really positive effects for filling that. Ditto for interesting food, interesting music, interesting friends, all that stuff that feels really luxurious. So the need and desire boundary feels really fuzzy. And so what does it mean in that context to be a great person of few desires? Because there are also needs.
There are also needs, exactly. This is a really tough one. As a matter of fact, I remember I got kicked out of a seminar and called about slow exercise with another person about, and at the time I was rather asinine, other sort of cynical views, like, food, water, and sleep, that's a need. Yeah. I don't think I was right. One thing to keep in mind, and I mentioned it's like, I said to bracketed, senses up. I'm wondering why I did that. And I think that part of the reason is because as Michiyama notes in his commentary on this, it's not a matter of unionizing desire. And in fact, there are also desires that these things you said, companionship, started friendships, practice, all these things. Yes, we can talk about it. Talking about it as a need, and I find that problematic. So I think that, I think that what we're going to do is to, it's a matter of discernment, it's a matter of blindness. And, how do you distinguish what are, whatever, desire from the ones that are selfish, harmful to others that we don't want to do? It's not really a question of getting rid of desires. It might mean having fewer of them. The things we talk about, practice, friendship, all those human values. But, the crux is that we practice so many of those without thinking about it in a way that we harm people individually. As we put ourselves in this position of what was burned down, that kind of thing. And we're invited to bring our whole blindness to it. So we have the audio thing, principle of just enough. We have the precept, not taken, so not given. I think about it. It's like, why go and do the crucible of hero like this? Plain theft into generations. And so it's cool to know that. But also, David, there's I started listening about not gauging what I put in my bowl, I was in Jake's bowl, or making judgments about that, recognition that my desire and also even my needs, might keep picking those. But I think we're both under the obligation to be discerning and not act blindly, as we so often do with so many others. It's part of reason we have so much suffering in also with me, especially as I think. Does that help at all?
Thank you, it does.
Jerry.
I was thinking about what you said. Thank you very much. That's wonderful. Thank you. I thought the talk was wonderful. And I think there's something about part of having up is knowing about it. And I think so often we go around thinking about our brokenness or what we lack, or, we sit in Zazen and we think, okay, I'm going to develop my practice. And we forget that we really have a lot of self. We really have a lot. We have enough. We have more than enough. And, we live in such, especially here in Chicago, we live in such a large choice, not just in physical things, but I'm always this wonderful condo that's right in the neighborhood. You know, we have the food here, we have friends, we have the music in Chicago, and we're in paradise, and we walk around like we don't understand what enough is. And I think there's something about just the acknowledgement of, yeah, I got enough supply here, that helps us figure out desires and needs. Once you realize, we don't really need to worry about it, except to be aware of really how much you are, to really how much you actually need.
Thank you, Jerry. I mean, that's, I think, just the idea of knowing you have enough. I mean, this is appreciation, and it's so important for us to, yes, we talk about, you know, our lives as sea of suffering, sea of joy, all this kind of stuff, and that's some stuff. But it's also this beautiful world with beautiful people and sins and events, and we have to stay alive to that rather than getting all crumpled in our hearts and cursing Dan or buying Tesla or whatever. Yeah. Please don't buy a Tesla. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I shop at Amazon. There are things that I really rather not. But it becomes almost impossible. We are in this physical realm, you know, and we can massage the boundary, but we're very difficult to step out of it unless you really want to become a fervent mountain. So, me and then, for me. Okay.
This is kind of boring. Thank you for the talk. This one about all kinds of stuff, but the word that occurred to me when you said you need versus or slash or hand desire is version. And granted, there's a thing that what occurred to me was the very Catholic version of human flourishing. But I wonder if there's something to that. Have you been used that word very much? I see it very often in the Zen context, but I think the Zen practice offers you to do flourishing that's different from the other kinds of spiritual life. We're clearly not doing Catholic human flourishing here. But there is something about this intimate about your nature.
Yeah.
You know, quote unquote, your empty nature, your intimacy with your self, intimacy with your needs and desires and priorities, but also the experience of other things. So I just wanted to throw that out there. There's something about flourish. I certainly noticed that in my own practice.
Yeah.
Getting intimate with my limitations, but also my never ending desires of needs, that a different kind of version is possible. I have that possible. That seems much more so, but that doesn't mean that as a mental kind of all facets.
Yeah. Thank you, Harvey. That's really interesting. I mean, I often state this from my earlier life, I have, you know, very savings and fees and survival around in my bed, and I try, and they're important to me, and try not to. Well, I'm not a Christian for one thing, so they're not out, turn up in my daily life, but I do find myself tempted to bring them out in dollar box. And you know, the thing you said about this view of flourishing, you know, there is the line in one of the Gospels that where Jesus says, you know, I came that you might have life and have it more abundantly. And I think as Zen practice is this. This is what is possible for me to have life and show that more abundantly. So yeah, flourishing, you are.
That's it.
It's hard for me to hear. Are you saying flourishing or nourishing?
I couldn't hear you. I don't know what you were saying.
I was saying flourish, FL.
Oh,
but yeah. I also think of it as nourishing.
So. It kind of works both ways, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Did you hear that, Margaret?
Well, no, I did.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't before.
Okay, well, yeah. Flourishing and nourishing.
Flourishing.
You're saying
flourishing?
Or you could put these other one. It is. We are. We have 5 more minutes for discussion. I believe, but I'm checking schedule. It's, no, where am I? Yeah, the saw is at 11:20.
Oh, Jim. There's more time.
No, no. I just there's plenty. There's 5 minutes. I'm just trying to keep track of time. So,
I just really like what everyone said so far, and the flourishing comment really makes me think about the whole surviving versus thriving, you know, in terms of needs and wants. But then we turn that on its head. It reminds me of something that I think Rev Anderson says in one of his books, where it's sometimes hurt is not harm. So if I don't get something that I want, I might be hurt. But if I don't get something that I need, I might use.
Yes.
And I think that distinction is important, because you get hurt all the time. It's like, oh, my feelings are hurt. I'm so sad. I'm going to go like cry in the park and listen to jazz because we have a bunch.
So,
but if I'm actually harmed, oh, I didn't get my medicine and I'm in so much pain that I can't function.
Yeah.
There's a significant difference. And I think I very much think about that in that context when I'm thinking about needs versus wants.
No, and thank you. That's very, that's important. You know, I mean, sometimes it's very clear. You don't need your medicine, you need at his farm. You know, I want to have a particular kind of fancy dessert for dinner, not as clearly just desire. But there's this huge, and they have to be noted that those two things are very different. At the same time, you have to recognize that there's this huge range thing where it's not necessarily going to be clear to us. You know, you might not get what you do, you might not even know you need it. Well, okay. Oh, gosh, I've got 2 more, but I'm okay. And if he's open to, I'd also like to invite my teacher title for a comment tomorrow. But,
I've just briefly, Howard, thank you for this idea of flourishing. It makes me realize that in my life now, Zazen enables me to flourish every day.
Margaret?
I just want to say to finish the idea of how much is enough, knowing what is enough, is very much involved in this need, desire, suffering, or all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Hi again. May I invite you to make a comment if you have one. It's absolutely fine.
Well, not much.
I'm sorry, Tegan. Hold on. The sound, I don't know how to make it sound.
Oh, can you hear me?
Here.
Okay.
That's a pun.
The pun came outside.
There we go. That will just go.
There we go. Can you hear me?
Power on.
There we go.
Try again.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I don't have so much to say. Just I appreciate, you know, in the context of the world, what is enough? What is nourishing? What is flourishing? How do we measure what we need, what we want, and the difference? And so I think it's an important question. And it's a practice question. And how do we each practice enough, you know, having enough? And for people who are, you know, who can't get enough, who are in, you know, in terrible straits, people in Gaza, for example, and people, you know, anyway, there are people all around the world, including in Chicago, who don't have enough. So how do we just take care of taking care of ourselves and thinking and being aware of others? So that's my thoughts about this. So thank you very much for your talk, Nielsen.
Thank you, Tom. So I guess we're done with the pop. Does that mean
we will?
Thank God. And
I didn't need it.
So we will get ready to do our song. If I can plug in the phone sitting room, or
is that good up there?
Of course. You need a little boss. Okay. May our intention be to extend broad news of life in America's way.
In the darkness, we are free of illusion, our inexhaustible. We bow to our mind, it's our loudness. We vow to realize it.